Okay, good morning, everybody. This is Bio 231, and it is Monday, September 13th. And last time we had a lecture exam. And so that's sort of what lecture exams are going to be like, some multiple choice, some matching to figures, so you have to practice your exam figures. And that kind of just underscores how important the study guide is, so make sure you keep practicing all those figures in the study guide, and you can be doing better and better and better on exams. And it's probably not uncommon for you to even get 100% on an exam, right, if you just really utilize that exam, the exam guide, study guide. All right, so now we're moving on to skeletal tissues. We're going to start talking about bones. And so a good place to start is just let's talk about some components. What makes up the skeletal system? And we got three components that make up the skeletal system. Of course, bone is one of them. We do have to know something about bone, but also cartilage and ligaments. And ligament is, does anybody know what kind of tissue a ligament is? Maybe you had to know for the last exam. What kind of tissue is a ligament? Is it epithelium? No. It's a connective of tissue of some kind, but now specifically, what kind of connective tissue? Can it be weak? Can it be strong? Should it be stretchy? Okay. It should be really strong. It should be the strongest kind. So what kind of fiber does it have? Collagen. It's loaded with collagen fibers, and it is dense, regular connective tissue. It's the strongest kind of connective tissue in your body because it's loaded with collagen. All right, so a ligament is a bone-to-bone connection. And it's used to limit the movement between bones. So there are some bones that we have been looking at in lab, these three of my lab sections, not the fourth one yet. There's some joints in the bones that make up our skull, and those are immovable joints. We call those sutures. They're held together with collagen fibers. Okay, so those are the components. The function of bone. Okay, well, number one is support. The internal structure of bone is such that it can sustain a lot of weight without being crushed. All right, so bone is very rigid and strong. Cartilage is firm but flexible. So some parts of your body you might want to have some kind of structure, but you want it to be bendable. Like, what would be a good place to have cartilage? Ear? Yeah, except that's true, but it doesn't really matter too much if our ear is flexible, because my dad could wiggle his ears, but most people can't really wiggle their ears, right? And nose, that's not too important. Unless somebody punches you in the nose, it's good that it kind of bends and gets out of the way. But there's another real important part of the body, and that is your rib cage. It has cartilage in it, so your rib cage can expand and contract. All right, so that's an important place for cartilage. Now, the other important thing about cartilage, since it can form a structure, it's a lot lighter than bone. That is a huge advantage, because in order to haul bone around with you all the time, it costs energy, right? So, for instance, it takes a lot more energy to drive a big truck around than a motorcycle, right? So the bigger, the heavier you are, the more energy it takes to move you around. So it saves some energy. And also, cartilage sometimes is used as a precursor during development of where a bone should form. So a bone will be modeled out of cartilage, and then that cartilage will ossify and become a bone later on in life. All right, so that's support. Protection is a really important function. The skull protects the brain, right? So the cranium protects the brain, and the rib cage protects the lungs and the heart, great vessels that surround the heart. And the vertebral column protects the spinal cord, right? So these are soft tissues that are easily damaged. And I'm probably lucky I'm still here. And the reason why I'm still here is because I have a really strong head. My skull protects my brain, right? And probably most of you could think of maybe some circumstances where you saw stars. And if you didn't have that nice, strong skeletal cranium around the brain, your brain probably just would have gone splat, right? Unfortunately. All right. Another important thing is for movement. Bones are used for motion because muscles can attach to bones. And what is muscle specialized for? Yeah, for contraction. And so when a muscle connects to bones and that muscle shortens, it brings those bones together for for motion. Okay, and also, not only think of motion, but think of limiting motion. Ligaments limit motion between various bones. And then here is an incredibly important function of bone for storage. And guess what bones store? Calcium, that's right. You probably all know that before you took this particular class, right? But it's an important storage place for calcium. But storing it for what? And we're going to learn some other even more important functions for calcium than just for making bone up. So calcium is important, right? Phosphate, that P right there stands for phosphate. That's another element sort of like calcium. That's stored in bone. And also, there are spaces within bone that we call bone marrow. And in bone marrow, we can store adipose tissue. And adipose tissue is just a big battery. It's a big energy reserve for our body. And then our last function right here is for blood cell production. Red blood cells, white blood cells are made in bone marrow, but it's a different kind. It's not yellow, which is just adipose tissue. We would call that red bone marrow. So red bone marrow actually makes red blood cells. We talked about mitosis once upon a time. And one of the important things about mitosis is to replace old and damaged cells. And I used an example of a red blood cell. Anybody remember how long a red blood cell lives for? Only about 120 days, then it has to be replaced, right? So red bone marrow is an incredibly active, highly metabolic place that is replacing about between 1 and 2 million cells, red blood cells in your body every second, right? So that's an incredibly important tissue, and we call the process of making red blood cells hemopoiesis. And so any kind of tissue that can make red blood cells is what we call a hemopoietic tissue. And now you know how important that is. And would you agree that's an important function of bone to make all those red blood cells? A hemopoietic tissue is a tissue that makes red blood cells. And if a hemopoietic tissues in your body aren't doing their job, what condition do you end up with? You end up with anemia. Anemia, when you can't make the proper number of red blood cells. All right, so those are important functions of blood. Of bone. Okay, let's talk about cartilage first. Okay. You know a little bit about cartilage. You know the three kinds. You got one that doesn't have any fibers in it. Kind of looks like glass. It's kind of translucent. It has some collagen, but it's in a very soluble form. It just kind of holds the matrix together. And chondrocytes, anytime you hear that word chondro, you should think of cartilage, and a site is a living cell. So a chondrocyte is just a living cell that we have in cartilage, and it's found within a lacunae or a little pit within the matrix. And so some places that have hyaline-type cartilage are articulations. That's the first thing that comes to mind. Joints between bones. Bones are protected from each other so they don't grind each other away by articular cartilage, but also the nose is articular cartilage. Costal cartilages in our rib cage, right? The larynx and trachea that help make up our airway system is made out of hyaline cartilage. All right, so here you see hyaline cartilage in blue, nose, rib cage, within joints are good examples of hyaline cartilage. Elastic cartilage is a little bit stronger. It's kind of similar, but it contains elastic fiber, so it can be a little bit stretchy and bendy. It's better to withstand repeated bending. A good example of this will be in the ear. Right, and then also part of our airway, it's called the epiglottis. When we get to the respiratory system, we'll look at the epiglottis, but it kind of functions as a trapdoor so that when we swallow stuff, this trapdoor folds down over our windpipe, so food doesn't go into our windpipe, it actually goes into the tube that goes to our stomach. Anybody know the name of that tube that goes to our stomach? The tube that goes to the lungs is a trachea, but the tube that goes to the stomach is the esophagus, right? And so that's where food should go. In the esophagus, the trapdoor, the epiglottis, right, diverts food from the trachea into the esophagus. Now what happens if you, by chance, you get food in your trachea? What happens? Well, yeah, you could die, right? You could choke to death, right? So that's a really bad thing. So that epiglottis is a real important feature, right, of the respiratory tract. And then we've got fibrocartilage, all right? That's the strongest kind. It can resist compression. It can resist tension. It can resist pulling apart. So good places for this kind of cartilage will be in the meniscus of the knee. I'm looking back over at the figure on the right-hand side. So here we have a knee meniscus. So the bone in the thigh is the femur. That's going to press down on the tibia right here. So there's some important cartilages within the knee called the meniscus that are made out of fibrocartilage. And there's fibrocartilage in the pubic symphysis. That's the joint between the two pelvic bones or the two adscaxae. Those would be good examples. And intervertebral discs as well. There's a part that's made out of fibrocartilage. And again, that's important because it can resist compression. All right, some types of bones. Oh, here is the windpipe. This is where we have hyaline cartilage in this region of the body. And you can kind of remember what these different sections of cartilage look like, because we just got done with that. Okay, types of bones. We sometimes classify bones by their shape. And some types are long bones, some are flat bones, some are short, and then some just are highly irregular. They have all kinds of different pieces associated with them. So a long bone is really small in two dimensions, like the anterior-posterior dimension of the humerus is really small. The right-left dimension is really small, but the, how would you talk about this dimension right here? The cranial caudal dimension, or the superior-inferior dimension, is really large, right? So if it's large in one dimension but really small in the other two dimensions, that makes a long bone. So good examples would be the humerus and bones in the forearm, like the radius and ulna, femur, for instance. But also the bones that make up the digits right here are long bones as well. Now these are really small, and you could say they're really short bones, but still one dimension is what? Very big compared to the other two dimensions, even the bones that make up the digits. So those would be long bones. Good example here is the humerus. A flat bone is, like it says, is a flat bone. So in one dimension, it's really small. Good example right here is the sternum, including the manubrium that's superior and the body, which is right here in the middle. And a short bone, a good example would be in the wrist and in the ankle right here are short bones. And a really good example of an irregular bone is a vertebrae. And in lab, most labs have looked at vertebrae already. Okay, here is the body, and then we have some bony plates sticking off the body. Anybody know the name of this bony plate sticking right off the body of this vertebrae right here? If you haven't had that in lab, you wouldn't know, but if you're Wednesday or Monday morning's lab, you have to know what that is. And that is the pedicle. That's the pedicle, and then there's another bony plate over here that's called the lamina. Okay, so we'll talk about that later on this afternoon. So make sure you know some examples of these different kinds of bones. Okay. All right, so a good place to start thinking about bones. Where's my little button? Here, my little button. Okay, is to understand something about a long bone. Okay, so let's take a look at, we'll use this as a model to understand bone in general. Okay, so here is, now would you call this a short bone, irregular bone, a flat bone? This bone right here we have in our arm. It's called the humerus. And indeed, you're right, it's a long bone because it's small in the right to left direction, it's small in an anterior-posterior direction, but it's very large in a cranial caudal direction. So this is a typical long bone. Okay, so we see some pieces. The ends of a long bone are what we call the epiphyses. And the part of a long bone that attaches the closest to your axial skeleton is what we call the proximal epiphysis. And then the distal epiphysis is farther away from where it attaches to your body. So here's the distal epiphysis right here. So you got the epiphyses, and in the middle you have the shaft or the diaphysis of a long bone. And you can see that the diaphysis is hollow, Right? But the epiphyses are not hollow. They're filled with bone. Okay? This kind of bone, we see, has a bunch of little bony plates in it. And it resembles what kind of item that you might have at home? A sponge, right? So we call this spongy bone. But it also goes by some other names, too, that we're going to talk about. These little bony plates right here are called trabeculae. And it makes this part of the bone really strong. There are arches and trusses in here that make the bone really strong that form the trabeculae or the lattice work of the bone. So sometimes we call this trabecular bone. So spongy bone could be called trabecular bone. But where do you see this spongy bone? Is it superficial or is it deep? It's deep inside this particular organ. Remember, bone is really an organ. And a lot of organs are not homogeneous. They're not the same on the surface compared to the deeper part of an organ. Good examples of that would be, for instance, the adrenal gland. There's an adrenal cortex and there's an adrenal medulla, right? The kidney has a cortex and a medulla. The cortex means the superficial part of the organ, right? So here is the cortex of this bone. That's the superficial part. And the deep part is what we call the medulla, right? And so here is the medulla. So sometimes spongy bone is called medullary bone because it's deep. The superficial bone, notice, does not look like a sponge. It looks solid. We call that compact bone. So another name for compact bone would be cortical bone, meaning that it's very superficial. So superficial bone versus medullary bone. Another name for medullary bone besides trabecular or spongy would be cancellous. Cancellous, trabecular, medullary, spongy all mean the same thing, which means what? Deep bone that's deep inside of a bone. Okay. Compact bone, I pretty much just goes by two names, compact or you would say superficial, but the proper term would be cortical bone, cortical bone. All right, do you notice this little line right here going right through spongy bone in the epiphyses? If we were to take away the cortical bone down here in the distal epiphysis, we would see a line moving right through there as well. That's an epiphyseal line, or in three dimensions, we would call that an epiphyseal plate. And in people that are still growing and developing, that's made out of cartilage, hyaline cartilage in particular, and sometimes it's called the growth plate. So this is a region where a bone grows, right, in length, not in diameter, but in length. So there is an epiphyseal plate here, an epiphyseal plate down over here, and that's how a bone grows in length before puberty, okay? And what is typically stronger? What would be a good impression to have in your mind? What is stronger, bone or cartilage? Bone is a lot stronger, right? If this is cartilage, then that growth plate can be damaged pretty easy by two kinds of forces. Axial compression, if you were to press on the diaphyses of a bone and compress the bone, then this epiphyseal plate will be squished, and that could kill some of the chondrocytes in this area, and the bone will stop growing in that particular plate, right? That will damage growth, and then that person will just have a short limb in that part of the body that was damaged. And if it's just one side of the body, then they're going to have one leg a lot longer than the other. Okay, that happens. So I'm sure we all compressed our legs as we were little kids, right, on a swing set. What's a typical way that somebody could damage a long bone in their leg by over-compressing, say, a femur, for instance? Yeah, you like to swing real high, and what's really fun is to jump off the swing when you're really high up in the air and you go flying through the air, and that's fun, right? Except for what? The landing is hard, right? When you compress the bone, and that can damage that epiphyseal plate. So that's not a good thing to let your little youngsters do. All right, also twisting can really damage this epiphyseal plate. That's typically done, for instance, when youngsters are playing Little League baseball and somebody's tells them to start throwing something other than a fastball. A fastball, you just throw as fast as you can straight. That doesn't damage the arm so much as trying to throw a ball that's going to curve, like a curveball or a screwball or a slider or something like that, where you have to put a lot of spin on the ball. What does that do to the long bones of your arm? That twists the bones, and when you have this growth plate right here, it can be twisted to a sufficient degree to damage the growth plate. And that would be really unfortunate if that were to happen, because that's somebody's, what, dominant strong arm. So they have to be taught not to throw any of those kinds of pitches when they're young. Okay, anybody? Oh, another thing about this growth plate right here. I said it closes over at puberty, just about. And at least within a family, who reaches puberty first? Who reaches maturity first? Females or males? Indeed, females do. All right, and since they reach puberty at an earlier age, these growth plates ossify, right, and their bones stop growing at an earlier age compared to males in the same family. So males typically will grow for another year or two, and that's the reason why typically they're a little bit taller. Okay, that's not a steadfast rule, but that's just kind of a nice rule of thumb as to why that happens. Okay, here is a big space, right, and is this superficial in the bone or deep inside the bone? Deep. What do we call that deep part of a bone? The medulla. So here is a cavity that we call the medullary cavity. And it's not wasted space, right? It's filled with marrow. And remember, there's two kinds. There's yellow, which contains adipose tissue, and red bone marrow, which is what kind of tissue? I don't know if you can say this word yet. It's what? A hemopoietic tissue, right? Hemopoietic tissue. It can build blood cells. Okay. So that's pretty good for what you have to know about a long bone. Come on, cursor. Ah, here's my cursor. Okay. So bone is a living tissue. There are cells that live inside bone, inside the lacunae, which we call osteocytes, right? So bone is an important living organ. So those cells need blood, and a blood vessel will enter the diaphysis through a nutrient foramen right in the middle of the diaphysis right here. Right, because it's bringing nutrients into this bone. And on the outside of all bones is a membrane, and that's called the periosteum. Peri meaning surrounding the bone. On the inside cavity of a bone, there's another membrane that we call the endosteum. And there's a nice relationship between the periosteum and the endosteum on the inside, because not only does a bone have to grow in length at the epiphyseal plates, but a bone also has to grow in diameter. And there are cells that build bone in the periosteum. We call those osteo-something, right? Those are what we call osteoblasts. They build bone on the outside, but notice that the bone is not solid bone. It's hollowed out on the inside right over here, and there's another kind of cell in the endosteum that breaks bone down. And we call that a osteoclast. So now you got three names of bone cells that you have to know. A mature bone cell that maintains compact bone is called an osteocyte. A cell that builds bone up in the periosteum is an osteoblast. And then the cell that breaks bone down is an osteoclast. Okay. So two of those cells are antagonistic to each other. This is probably the most important part of the class. If I were to say antagonism to you, does that have, what kind of connotation does that have? A good or negative connotation? That has kind of a negative connotation, but it's very important in terms of anatomy and physiology, because when you have two mechanisms that work against each other, then that part of your body is under very fine control and it's under balance. Right? So you have cells that can build bone up, the blasts, and they're in balance with the cells that break bone down, the osteoclasts. All right, so that's an antagonistic mechanism. So in terms of controlling things, you could relate this to your automobile. Would you ever drive an automobile without two mechanisms that are antagonistic to each other? What are the things that are antagonistic to each other in the car, which is a really good thing because you have precise control and balance over your car if they're working right? What are those two things that work against each other? The gas pedal and the brake pedal. That's right. You'd never think of driving your car without both of those systems operating perfectly, right? Because if only the gas pedal worked, right, you could start driving your car home from school. But when you got home, what would happen? Well, you just have to wave goodbye because you couldn't stop, right? So you need both. And so your body is built up on those same antagonistic mechanisms to control itself precisely, right? The osteoclast and osteoblast, and these two membranes right here. But that also kind of brings another thought to me. We have cells that break bone down and cells that break bone up. There is a very strange pathological process that happens in everybody if we're lucky enough to live old enough. All right, and this is a really strange kind of process, because if you look around the room and you look at yourself in the mirror, do you see another you in the room? No, you're like the only person in the world that is just like you, right? So there is a lot of diversity in our population, which kind of means, for instance, if there's a cold going around, does everybody catch that same cold? No, and why is that? Because we're diverse. We're a diverse group. We're all a little bit different, okay? And this process that I'm thinking about in bones is really strange, because it will affect everybody, or almost everybody. As we get older, we lose bone, and our bones become brittle, and they have a tendency to fracture. And does anybody know what that process is called? Osteoporosis, right? And osteoporosis is just a really strange disease process where the osteoclast activity starts to work a little bit harder compared to the osteoblastic activity, and we start to lose bone. And our bones get brittle. So it happens to men as well as women, but predominantly women. And does anybody know why is it predominantly women that are affected? Because the bones of males, because of testosterone, are a little bit bigger and stronger to begin with, so they can afford to lose more bone as we age. Okay? Women's bones are a little bit more dainty, and as soon as they start to lose some bone density, then they're more susceptible to fractures. Right, so if you're a woman with big, strong bones, you're lucky. That protects you to some degree from osteoporosis. But if you have a smaller frame, you'll be a little bit more susceptible. So that maybe should concern you. And what would be a good question to ask? How do you protect yourself from osteoporosis? And the answer is by having good dietary calcium and phosphate in your diet. Okay. But there's something else, too, that's really important, so that calcium ends up in bone. And that is, think of a muscle. If you were to walk around all day with a 5-pound weight in your right hand and curl that 5-pound weight all day long, guess what would happen to your biceps muscle on the right side of your body? Yeah, it would get big and strong, right? It would respond to that stress by getting bigger and stronger. And guess what? Bones do exactly the same thing, because they're living tissue. When you exercise a bone and put stress on them, they get bigger and stronger as well. So the two things that always work to maintain health is diet and exercise, okay, even for bones. That will protect you from osteoporosis, right? Male or female really doesn't matter. But for females, especially premenopausally, exercise before menopause is protective for osteoporosis. All right, so there's something about a long bone. And not only can we think of the long bone as a model for all bones, but we want to look at some of the internal structure of bone. So we see this bone right here is kind of like being a tube. But if we look in compact bone, we can see other tubular structures right here. All right, and those are what we call osteons. So bone is very strong and rigid because it's built on a structure of tubes, right? It's a tube within tubes surrounded by tubes, and the tubular structure is very, very strong. It's hard to bend, hard to twist. It's very almost impossible to compress. Okay, so here we see the articular cartilage, and here is an osteon right here. And what do you see everywhere in this bone entering through this nutrient foramen right here? You see blood vessels, right? So that has some advantages and disadvantages. For instance, if you fracture a bone, all these bony plates become very sharp and it lacerates all these blood vessels. So what is one terribly dangerous thing about when you fracture a bone? Blood loss. We call that hemorrhage, right? As a matter of fact, if you break a big bone and can't get to a hospital, you could bleed to death just from bleeding within that bone, right? So that's a downside for having bone highly vascularized. But the upside is that if it's stabilized and the bone is able to heal, right, if you don't die as a result of that hemorrhage, guess how bone heals? Very nicely, because it's highly vascular. So in about 4 to 5 weeks, if you take care of that bone, it will be back even stronger than before, because these blood vessels can bring in nutrients, can bring in energy molecules, as well as calcium and phosphate, right, in order to rebuild. So that's one nice thing about having a lot of blood in bones. Here's the periosteum on the outside of the bone, and it's connected with connective tissue that we call Sharpey's fibers, or these perforating fibers that attach the periosteum to this cortical bone surface right here. Okay, let me see if I can get to an osteon. You mean we don't have osteons anymore? Come on, Mr. Cursor. Okay. All right, so we just took a little wedge out of a long bone, and we're looking at superficial bone. And if you look at this bone right here, how would you classify this superficial bone? Is it spongy or? It's compact bone, right? So I don't see any trabecular plates. All right, so here is the osteocyte in this little lacunae, and then we have the matrix. So indeed, this is a nice connective tissue. Here's a nucleus inside that osteocyte. And so this is the cell responsible for maintaining this mature bone area. And these circles are what we call lamellae. And there's one on top of another on top of another. We call these concentric lamellae. And all of these are going to form an osteon. In the very center of the osteon, you have a vein, an artery, and a nerve. Right? And you're going to have a capillary, so nutrients can diffuse, right, from this central canal of an osteon to these living cells right here, as well as oxygen. Right? But since the matrix right here is solid calcium phosphate, it's like this tabletop. Stuff can't diffuse through this part of the matrix, so there has to be little connections between cells, and you see them right here. We call them canaliculi. See, these canaliculi have processes of the cells touching each other so that these cells can share nutrients and oxygen, as well as waste products to get rid of by this vein right here. All right, so here is an osteocyte in a lacunae, and these little things, they look like little microfractures. They're not really fractures. They're meant to be there so that things can diffuse from one lamella to the next and from one cell to the next, and we call those canaliculi. Okay. So those are important. That's going to delete. Okay, bone. Here's a really good example of an osteon. So here is an osteon. And as a matter of fact, we used the concept of structural and functional unit in class once before. I think I asked you, what's the structural and functional unit of life? What's the basic building block of life? It's a cell, right? Okay. And it's a pretty complicated topic because you know a lot of organelles and functions that organelles do. Well, there's a structural and functional unit for compact bone, okay, and that is an osteon. And we see an osteon right here, and it's composed of what? These concentric lamellae, osteocytes and lacunae, a central canal with blood vessels and a nerve, right, and canaliculi, which connect all of the lacunae and osteocytes up together. We also have some parts of compact bone right between osteons, and we call these the interstitial lamellae. They don't really look like osteons at all. And then surrounding the whole bone, there's another tube that we call the circumferential lamellae, right, that surround all of the osteons. But I do want you to know that an osteon is the structural and functional unit of compact bone. Okay, and again, we can see a nice osteon right here. Okay, now what makes bone up are two kinds of compounds. The two kinds of compounds are either organic components or inorganic components. All right, so the organic components would be things like cells that contain phospholipids. All right, some of the cells that we talked about are the blasts that build bone, the clasts that break bone down, and the osteocyte that maintains mature bones. And then there are some progenitor cells, which all of these other cells are derived from. So these will differentiate into these different kinds of cell types. So they're a stem cell that can be located in the periosteum or the endosteum. Right, and where's the periosteum again? It's on the outside. And what's the job of those cells in the periosteum? To break bone down or to build bone up? Build it up, that's right. And in the endosteum, it's to hollow the bone out. Those are pretty much osteoclasts, right, in the endosteum. But nonetheless, all these cells come from these osteoprogenitor cells. Okay, there's another organic compound, and that's the fibers that make up bone, and those are collagen fibers that we see on the slide on the right over here. So here you see a bunch of concentric lamella that is making up an osteon, right? And notice the orientation of these collagen fibers, right? Notice as you go from inferior to superficial, they twist to the right, and the next layer twists to the left, and then it twists to the right once again. So you could actually think of these different lamella as being different layers, for instance, maybe in a tire, the different belts within a tire, or the different layers in plywood that makes plywood really, really strong. All right, so there are collagen fibers that go through the matrix along with calcium that prevent the bone from being pulled apart, right? They resist tension, and these fibers also resist twisting. So tension is the force of pulling. The force of twisting is what we call torsion. So torsion or twisting and tension is resisted by the collagen fiber that's in between the lamellae right here. The other component in the matrix is the inorganic material, and that is basically calcium, but there's also phosphate, and it's put together in different ways. Sometimes we call that hydroxyapatite. Hydroxyapatite is the phosphate and calcium put together. You don't have to know this chemical formula right here, but you should be aware that that inorganic component, along with the collagen fibers, makes bone really strong, but it makes bone strong in a different way from preventing twisting and tension. It resists compression, right? So it resists the squeezing of the bone, which is a different kind of force. So I will want you to know these two different components, right? The organic component and the inorganic component, and what forces these different components protect the bone from. All right, so the inorganic protects the bone from what? Contraction, getting squished. The organic part prevents it from twisting too much or stretching. Right, two different kinds of forces, and bones do really good at all three, resisting all three of those forces because of the different components that bone is made up with. Okay, so both of those mixtures make bone very durable and strong without becoming brittle. All right, so make sure you can answer this question. What component of a bone resists torsion? Organic, and give me the name of the component.
Collagen.
And what about compression? The inorganic. The calcium and phosphate, and if you want to say hydroxyapatite, that's fine. And what about tension, pulling? Again, those are the fibers, the collagen fibers, right? The pulling or tension. Okay. All right, so I think we talked about most of this stuff over here. The concentric lamella of an osteon. Sometimes an osteon is called a haversian system. Let me go back to maybe this slide right here. Okay, so here you can see osteons right here. These are the concentric lamella. There are also lamellae. They completely encircle the diaphysis of the bone. Those are the circumferential lamellae. And here's that haversian canal. Volkmann's canals are the ones that run perpendicular to the haversian canals. Where are those at? Out right here. Okay, so here's a Volkmann canal. These are perpendicular to the Haversian canals right here. All right, what is the structural and functional unit of compact bone called? That's an osteon. All right, so here's an osteon, and you look at these underneath the microscope. Here you can see an osteon that has been kind of reflected away layer by layer so that you can see the concentric lamellae. Oh, and here's a nice view of the circumferential lamellae around the whole bone right here. Okay. Well, let's talk about bone growth. A bone can grow by two major processes. There is something, and both of these processes are what we call ossification. Ossification just means the building of bone, the deposition of the hydroxyapatite in the matrix of bone. One process is called intramembranous ossification, and this means that before there's a bone in some part of your body, there is what? A membrane, which kind of models where that bone is going to be. All right, and a membrane is kind of flat, so a membrane is a really good model for the development of flat bones, and we have a lot of flat bones in our skull, and indeed, that's where most of the intramembranous ossification takes place, and that is the bones of the head. Okay, so most bones of the skull develop by intramembranous ossification. The other kind is endochondrial ossification. All right, so when you see this word chondrial right here, what connotation does that give you? What hint does that give you? Cartilage, right? Chondrocyte, cartilage cell. So that means that this kind of process begins in a model that's made out of cartilage and not a membrane. So it's more of a three-dimensional structure. Okay, so let's go back to intramembranous ossification. Well, there are osteoblasts within that membrane that start to lay down a bone matrix, okay? And then when that bone is formed, right, they become osteocytes. And so this happens, for instance, for bones of the skull. At birth, our cranium is not completely formed. The bones of the cranium, like could anybody give me a name of a cranial bone? Like frontal bone. That's a good one. How about parietal? Sure. Occipital. Temporal. Those are all important cranial bones. They're flat bones. All right, and they're formed by intramembranous ossification. They're not formed completely. And as a matter of fact, there's big holes between those bones. And those holes are called fontanelles. I don't know if I have a picture of fontanelles in this chapter, sort of. Okay, so here's frontal, parietal. All right, here where the sphenoid bone is going to be, there's a large membrane that's not ossified even at birth, as well as over here. All right, so this would be the sphenoid fontanelle, this would be the mastoidal fontanelle. There's two more in this region. This is the frontal, and then anterior would be here, and posterior would be here. And these are important because, all right, in somebody that's being born, this cranium has to deform. It has to squish to get through the birth canal. All right, so that allows these bones to move. All right, but that also means that this area right here, these fontanelles, don't protect the underlying brain very well. And so a neonate's brain can be damaged if they're not handled properly. Right? They can be punctured very easily. Even vibration and shaking, right, can damage the underlying brain. And does anybody know for how long these fontanelles persist in a neonate? Usually a neonate, right, is a newborn baby, but these things persist for up to 2 years. Right, so it's important to consider that. Oh, it says right here. Oh, okay, good. All right, for up to 2 years. All right, and then they ossify. Okay, endochondrial ossification are all bones below the head except the clavicles, and the clavicles are the collarbones right here. They're intramembranous ossification as well. All right, so first, a model is made out of hyaline cartilage, and then osteoblasts move into the hyaline cartilage and they start to deposit bone matrix. So how does that look like? Let's take a look at this process. All right, so here is a nice long bone, and you see that it is built out of hyaline cartilage first, right? And the primary ossification center is right smack in the middle of the diaphysis of the bone, and then there's a secondary ossification center that forms this bone collar on the outside. So these are the two areas where bone starts to form, right? And then eventually they merge together, right? As well as merge up to the epiphyseal plates, right? Then as the bone keeps growing, then osteoblastic activity starts to make the medullary cavity on the inside while still depositing bone on other bone that has been deposited. We call that kind of bone development appositional growth. So whenever you start to deposit bone on previous bone surfaces, we call that appositional bone growth. All right, so this proceeds, and then a nutrient foramen develops and brings blood into this developing bone. We see this bone collar developing all the way around. Okay, and then the epiphyseal bone centers develop, and bone starts to be deposited in the proximal and epiphyseal areas, the proximal and distal epiphyses of this long bone. And then they merge together, right in this region right here, and that's why those epiphyseal plates you see are made out of cartilage in this area. All right, so here is the epiphyseal plate right here, and this is how the bone then grows in length. Okay, and then in the endosteum, we have the osteoclasts that make the medullary cavity, and the periosteum right here makes the wall thicker and thicker and thicker, okay, from the osteoblasts in the periosteum. Okay, so this is what we call endochondrial ossification. And this is kind of what it looks like. I see some osteons up over here, maybe some osteons down over here. But in this region right here, I just see cartilage. So this would be a nice micrograph of what this epiphyseal plate. So there's not a membrane right here. This is just cartilage. All right, so appositional growth, I don't know, then maybe I'm mentioning that. Maybe that's an online quiz question. I'm not sure. Okay, so bones, we said we're a living tissue, and bone is always remodeling itself depending on your activity level. All right, so maybe you could look at this column over here in the room. That's a nice concrete column. And when they built the building, they poured that concrete, and that's the column that was there 40 years ago or whenever they built this building. And that kind of looks like a bone in your body, but the bones in your body don't stay there forever. All right, they're in your body for only 5 years. And then they're completely replaced. So it's the job of breaking bone down. What kind of cells break bone down? Osteoclasts are busy breaking bone down. And, of course, the osteoblasts are busy building bone back up in the right areas depending on your activity level. Right? So we call that bone remodeling. Your bones are being remodeled all the time. And that's why exercise is protective against osteoporosis. Okay? So every 5 years, you have a completely new skeletal system. Okay, to repair bone, okay, first, of course, that bone has to stop bleeding. So a blood clot has to form. And then about after 2 or 3 days, within that region of the blood clot, there are fibroblasts that move into the blood clot. And the fibroblasts secrete what into the matrix? What do fibroblasts secrete? How about fibers, like collagen fibers? So there's a network of collagen fibers that kind of glue all the bone fragments together. And so that stabilizes the fracture, and that prevents further laceration of muscles and tendons and blood vessels. All right. And after about 2 or 3 days, that fibrous network is what we call a callus. Right. And then, so that holds the bones together, but that callus, right, is not as strong as bone, right? And it can be damaged if that bone is twisted or bent again. So guess what we do to help protect that callus that forms for broken bones? Yeah, they're usually casted, right? So, because if a callus is injured, right, early on, then the bone might not ever heal properly. So it's really important to protect that callus. All right, then the osteoblasts enter the callus, right, and deposit new bone matrix so that a bone is really healed very nicely in about 4 to 6 weeks, as long as you don't refracture that bone while it is healing. And if it does, then the bone probably will never grow back as strong or in the right location without maybe some other further kinds of surgical intervention. Okay, so that's it for the introductory chapter on osseous tissue or bone tissue, unless you have some questions. I don't have a sign-in sheet. I left it up in my office today. What a drag. Well, maybe it's just a little late. I forgot to ask. So there's no sign-in sheet today. All right, so that's it. So when's the next test? Next test. Next week? No. I brought the physiology syllabus. That doesn't help. When is the next test? October 4. But some labs do have a practicum next week. The Wednesday labs do. The Monday labs don't, because they're a week behind. Oh, yeah, cool. Hold on, let me turn.